From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here again with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, you can call us now at 1-800-462-7413. And along with your calls, some topics to talk about.
Yes, Zorba. We're going to talk about sugary drinks and their possible relationship to cancer. Kind of interesting. I think diet and cancer is always an interesting and an important topic. And I've got good news about Alzheimer's. Hey, who can say there's good news about Alzheimer's?
Okay.
But I've got it. Very important news. I think important things that people who are worried about dementia and memory loss as they get older are going to want to hear about. Great information published in JAMA.
And what's our recipe today?
The recipe is cold cucumber soup. It's good in the summer, good in the winter, good in the fall, good in the spring. Who has cold soup? We do at our house. You're going to want to try this recipe. I know you're excited about it. Tom, every time I mention soup and I say cold soup, your eyes light up and you go, yes, give me cold soup.
No, actually, I'm okay with that.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, you know something? There's always a surprise on the show.
1-800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. Let's welcome our first caller, Zorba, a listener in Chicago, Illinois. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. How can we help?
Good. Thanks for taking my call, Tom, and the doc. So I was calling today about something called geographic tongue. I was diagnosed with it back in November because I had a slight burning pain on my tongue and noticed a sort of red patch right on the top and tip of it, and decided to go see a doctor who referred me to an ear, nose, and throat specialist who diagnosed me. And I was calling the doctor about it to see if he had any information about it. From my research and from my understanding from my ENT, it's sort of a odd situation that hasn't had a lot of research done on it. And I was wondering specifically about drinking alcohol while having a current sore. And then also my ENT prescribed me a corticosteroid cream to use on it. And I was wondering about long-term use of that and if that's safe.
Sure. Lots of things. So what happened? Did you stick out your tongue one day and look at it? Or was there just a symptom?
I had a feeling on it, and it was a slight burning. It almost felt like I had burned my tongue eating some food, and I stuck it out, but there was a very uniform red patch that kind of had a circular white line around it, and over the next few days, it expanded. A few other patches showed up, usually starting as a small white patch that would then expand in a circle, with leaving behind a smooth red patch in the middle, and they would heal over a few days or a few weeks, and then the process would start over again.
Yeah, you've gone through this for a while. Well, was there any treatment? So you said the steroid cream. Have you done that? Any other treatment that your ENT doc has actually given you?
No, nothing that he gave me specifically. He told me that the limited amount of research that's been done on the condition, it might be related to stress. It could be related to dietary deficiencies. So he did actually have me take an over-the-counter zinc supplement that didn't really seem to help. The corticosteroid cream seemed to really help in terms of the duration and the severity of the sores. But again, I don't want to use it for months on end if that's something I shouldn't be
absolutely
doing.
You know, it's interesting. When we don't know something and we're looking for something, we say, well, maybe it's diet. A lot of times, actually, it is diet. But often, there's not a lot of research on geographic tongue. There's not a lot of research on the flora in our mouth. You know, we have bacteria in our mouth. They are part of our life and our whole gut. And what we call the biome, which is the bacteria we live in, really affect us. And in fact, there are a lot of theories that go on that even now have to do with obesity and what actually is living in your colon. But looking at what's living in your mouth, I do have a couple suggestions. First of all, there isn't a lot of research. Well, I think there actually was some research, but there's no new research on exactly what causes it. But there are some interesting sort of ways to begin to deal with it. So there's a medication, first of all, called clotrimazole troche, which is a yeast medication. A troche is a lozenge. Fits in your tongue, clotrimazole troche. And I've had quite a good, quite a lot. I've had some experience with that in sort of beginning to change the flora of your mouth. So one of the things I'd recommend, that's a prescription drug. Call your doc. Say you heard a doc on the radio. You want to try a clotrimazole trose. It's C-H-L-O-R-T-R-I-M-A-Z-O-L-E. You're roughly like that. I always use spell checkers since I never know these. And what I would do is you take it 5 times a day. For about 10 days, we get a couple of refills. Some people actually have to take it for like 30 or 40 days, and it changes the yeast in your mouth. Well, what we're doing is we're changing yeast that may be overgrown in your mouth. That's all it is. It's an anti-yeast thing. In addition to that, what you want to do is then repopulate your mouth with a probiotic that's lactobacillus 3 or 4 times a day, or simply go and get some yogurt with active culture. Eat it very slowly. Yogurt is lactobacillus, and it just repopulates your mouth with that. And often, that's something that will begin to get a geographic tongue or practically any tongue abnormality out of control. Usually, there's a yeast issue, or whatever, you know, it's an anti-yeast product, but it really changes lots of other things besides molds that are in your tongue. And that's what I would try. And I think that is, you're right about the steroid cream. It may work on a temporary basis, but that's, a steroid cream is a significant thing. It's not like the anti-yeast that I would recommend. Get rid of the yeast, repopulate with lactobacillus.
Perfect. Well, thank you for that. You're welcome. In terms of drinking a beer every once in a while,
I forgot about the beer. My goodness, of course. Well, in Wisconsin, you know, we consider beer to be one of the four basic food groups. You know, and that's, you know, milk being one of them, beer being another one. I can't really remember the other two food groups. Corn being the third one. And then what's the fourth food group? Do you know what the fourth food group is, Tom? Bratwurst. So you have to have that every day. But yes, I don't think there's any problem, you know, drinking a beer or drinking any kind of an alcoholic beverage. I don't see where that would really make a difference. I think this, what is living in your mouth, is actually the issue with geographic tongue. And there's not a lot of research, and this tends to work. So let me know what happens.
Perfect. Great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Sure,
thanks for
appreciate the call. Here's what a dope I am. You
dope.
Said, did you stick out your tongue and look at it? I tried to stick out my tongue. I can't see it. I know. I forgot about that there's
the
such
mirror.
A thing as a
That's
mirror.
Right. That's right. You stuck out your tongue. I can't see my tongue either. That's right. Stick out your tongue. Can you see it? Exactly right.
Anyway, 800.
Well, moving on. Moving right along.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Before our next call, Zorba, sugary drinks linked to?
Well, linked to cancer. It's sort of interesting. First of all, I mean, we don't know. There are lots of issues we have. We know heart disease is caused by a lot of things, but lack of exercise and, you know, exercise and diet play a big role in heart disease. We know that diet plays a big role in cancer. Very simple thing. We get colon cancer in the United States. They get gastric cancer in Japan. That's it. Japanese that move to the United States end up getting more colon cancer. Japanese Americans who move to Japan end up getting more gastric cancer. So there are dietary links that are undoubtedly there. And this was an observational study. BMJ, part of a lot of observational studies, no proof, absolutely. How do you control over 20 years how much sugary drinks people eat? But you do it through a questionnaire. So roughly 100,000 people, average age of 42, filled out a 24-hour food intake. The issue about this is that they're sitting over 24 hours writing everything down. And they did this on a periodic basis. So if you're part of the study, you got to write everything down for 24 hours. And most people are pretty good about it. And it listed, among other things, about roughly 100 sugary drinks, whether or not you had Coke, you know, whether or not you had Diet Coke, for example, sugary drink of that. So over the next roughly 9-10 years, there were 2,000 cases of cancer, okay? Roughly 700 cases of breast cancer, 300 cases of prostate cancer, and about a little over 150 cases of colon cancer. So they looked at sugary drink consumption, and the highest one quarter, in other words, the people who ate the most sugary drinks, were 30% likely to actually have any cancer, and roughly 40% likely in the breast cancer category to have breast cancer. So in other words, the women who drank sugary drinks had a 40% increased risk of getting breast cancer over a 10-year period. Is this cause and effect? Maybe. Maybe it's a lifestyle issue. Maybe it's women and men, because it was also in men, prostate cancer and colon cancer, 30% increased risk. May also be men who drink sugary drinks, don't exercise as much, eat other things. Yeah. In other words, we can't exactly look at it. But I think it's one more nail in the coffin that we have too much sugar, period. Mm-hmm. In other words, sugar is hardwired in our body because it was a great source of energy, and we love it, and we eat too much of it. And so here you have stroke that's linked, for instance, to artificial sweeteners. We talked about that in the past. Mm-hmm. And now you have cancer that may be linked to drinks that are actually sugary. And I think the answer is what society is doing right now in America is to move away from all this sugary and artificially sweetened stuff and move to drinks that actually are more subtle. And that's what's basically going on. You can have fizzy drink, but you don't need sugar. You don't need the artificial sweetener. And this may have a role in whether or not you get cancer or a stroke. Mm-hmm. We have to wake up and start drinking water or water that has a little something in it and doesn't have a lot of stuff that overpowers our body in ways we don't need it. And that's, to me, that's the bottom line. Is there a cause and effect? Maybe, but it just shows that sugary drinks are just not something you
need. It's pretty interesting. 800-462-7413 is our number. 1-800-462-7413. And now Zorba listener is with us in Norman, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hey, how are you?
Fine. How can we help?
Well, I recently went through a major surgery. I have neuroendocrine cancer.
Okay.
And I had about 40 inches of my small intestine removed. Mm-hmm. And so naturally I get a lot of friends and people that are wishing me well. And one of my friends had an uncle who had been through several bouts of cancer and decided that he was going to, this last time he had bone cancer. And they said he needed a bone marrow transplant. So he said, I'm not going to go through that much pain again. So he decided mm-hmm. To do CBD oil mm-hmm. and baking soda. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if the doctor had heard anything about the effects of CBD oil and the baking soda therapy for mm-hmm. cancer treatment.
Mm-hmm. So I've got some thoughts about CBD oil, and I've looked at it. And, you know, it's the cure for everything, you know. It's the cure for cancer. It'll help your sex drive. It helps indigestion. It's the snake oil of the 2000s. That's what it is. A lot of money in there. That means a lot of advertisement. It's become a huge industry with no research behind it. Hmm. You know, the research is 10 people. You know, here's a study of 10 people. They did this and they got better. Big placebo effect. How much gain do you get from it? Well, you know, like a lot of other things we look at, and then, I mean, it's in there. You go in Madison, Wisconsin, where we live, and I see advertisements on the Beltline, CBD oil helps your fibromyalgia. Another ad said CBD oil, good for depression. I thought, something that's good for depression, good for fibromyalgia, and good for cancer. How can it be that good? And the answer is, it can't. Mm-hmm. Now, let's look at whether or not it works for you for pain or discomfort. For some people, you know, we doctors gave too many opioids. You know, and what do we have now? We have an opioid crisis. So CBD oil, if for instance, for pain, is far safer than taking a narcotic, and I highly recommend it. And I'm pro-medical marijuana because it's far safer than opioids. When we look at CBD oil for arthritis and other things, absolutely use it. If it works and it does something for you, take it. Now, in terms of cancer, neuroendocrine cancer and other things, there is no harm at all. But there's also no research. And so the answer is you have to decide whether or not you want to do it with anecdotal information. And anecdotal information is somebody who says, hey, it works for me, try it. Well, it depends. And I'd say for any supplement or anything else, try it, see if it works for you, and see whether or not it's worth the money. It's kind of that sort of situation. But I have a question for you. You had the neuroendocrine cancer. What did they say was going on after they did the surgery?
Well, I had an amazing surgeon. Mm-hmm. He's unbelievable. It was a 5.5-hour surgery.
In Oklahoma City.
In Oklahoma City.
You've got great medical center in Oklahoma City, great medical school, great, you know, really good doctors.
Yeah. It was very good. So he indicated that he was able to remove 90% of the tumors mm-hmm. that he could get to. Mm-hmm. So it was lymph nodes that were affected, and he was able to remove 90% of what he could get to. And there was a lot that had already been incorporated in the vascular system, and you just can't remove it, you know, because it would remove blood flow. But so I'm on a sandostatin, sandostatin once a month, and they said that I will take that the rest of my life.
Right, right. And it it gets rid of the stuff that's produced basically by the tumors. I mean, that's what it does.
Yes.
I mean, it sort of, you know, removes it, if you will, you know, puts up a shield against it. And you're tolerating things? How's your GI tract? Diarrhea, anything of that nature?
Well, yeah, I'm figuring out what the new me is.
That you know what? Yeah. That is a great attitude. That is a wonderful attitude. That is so good of you to share. What's the new me? And that immediately moves you into another place. It's like crossing through the mirror of Alice in Wonderland. What is the new me? Because the answer is, there is a new you. That's it. There's no choice involved. And how do you then become the new you? I think you really have a good attitude about the surgery and what's going on.
It's going well.
Excellent, excellent. Well, attitude undoubtedly plays a role. And CBD oil and baking soda, I'd save your money and go to one of those great shows in Oklahoma City and take a vacation.
Certainly.
That's what I would do. Thank you so much for your call. And thanks for sharing that. It's a new me. I love it. I love it.
Thanks, Doc.
You're welcome.
Appreciate the call. I could use a new me.
Yeah, you could use a new me. That's right. But I was, you know, I was thinking about that. Here it is. You know, I got an older body. I'm going down the street today, you know, driving my car, going to the studio, looking at some younger people on the street and thinking, I used to be like that, but I'm not like that now. But on the other hand, I'm feeling okay today, and that's good. So what is this? Well, that was the old me. I ain't there no more. And this is the new me. And the fact is you want to take what you have and make it the best you can possibly have. And if you mourn for the old you, then you're stuck in a different place because you've moved on to the new you.
800-462-7413 is our number. That's 800-462-7413. And now, before we take a break, Zorba, time for the segment where a real-life doctor, that's you, squares off against
the... I only play a doctor on the show.
squares off against the mighty, mighty internet. We call it Google Doc.
I love this.
The following email came to us from Colin in DeForest, Wisconsin. He writes, Zorba, I just bought a ton of frozen yellowfin tuna steaks because they're delicious and healthy. Then yesterday, I read something online about tuna being high in mercury and that you should not eat it on a regular basis. So, Zorba, what should I do?
Once a week is great. Don't worry about it. Even twice a week is probably fine. But I wouldn't eat it every day, 24/7. And the mercury thing, theoretical, definitely an issue. Once or twice a week, you're cool.
Okay. Have a tricky question for the good doc.
That's it. I'm waiting for more Google. Come on. Bring it on. Bring on all those Google things.
Google doc. All right. If you have a tricky question for the good doc.
Just we don't want any fishy questions. We only want tricky questions.
Just make sure you tune in for Zorba's answer. Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our tasty cucumber soup recipe coming up.
Good. Doesn't have tuna in it.
Along with your calls, of course, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again, if you have a question for Zorba, 1-800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. Zorba, before our next call, cold cucumber soup.
That's right. That's right. Now, I love cucumber soup. I don't eat it very often. I probably have it a few times a year. But whenever I have it, I think, this is funny. It's really interesting because it's not a hot soup. I love warm soups. But this is just a different way of having vegetables. Gazpacho is wonderful. That's one probably my favorite. And this is probably my second favorite thing. And when cucumbers are available, they're available all year long. But kind of in the summer season, fall and spring season, I tend not to eat this in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the middle of the winter, cold cucumber soup just doesn't speak to me. But when the weather is kind of nice or when it's changing, it really is. And if you've never had cucumber soup, consider this recipe because it's refreshing. That's what it is.
Got it.
Okay, so we're going to start out with two large cucumbers. If you can get a European cucumber, those are these long cucumbers that are also called English cucumbers. They have fewer seeds. If you can get that, you want to start out with that. But two large cucumbers, either European or regular European, you have them, and then you take your fingers and get rid of all the seeds on the inside, mm-hmm. and you dice it up. And you should have roughly about a half cup of finely diced cucumbers, and the rest coarsely. So part of it you want to make, when you make these cucumbers, you want to take a half cup, finely dice it, and mm-hmm. the other stuff you want to leave it in chunky and coarsely dice it.
Couple of cucumbers, half cup of finely diced, the rest coarsely chopped.
You got it. Yeah. Half an avocado diced.
Half an avocado diced.
1.5 cups of plain Greek yogurt. Make sure it's plain. No sweetener, no vanilla, mm-hmm. just plain. You could also use sour cream if you want to, either light sour cream or regular sour cream.
That's 1.5 cups. Plain Greek yogurt.
3 tablespoonfuls of fresh lemon juice. You could use the frozen, which you then defrost, but frankly, fresh is always best.
Yes, 3 big tea, fresh lemon juice.
That's right. A small shallot chopped. If you don't have a small shallot, then use the equivalent of an onion.
Small shallot chopped or an onion.
A garlic clove.
A garlic clove.
1/3 cup of loosely packed dill.
1/3 cup of loosely packed dill. Okay, what does that mean, loosely packed dill?
Well, you take dill. You take it. It's a dill weed, and you buy it in the store or you buy it at the farmer's market, and then you kind of put it in and chop it up and loosely pack it.
Okay.
You know, that's what it is. It's sort of like you would do with parsley.
Okay.
And I know you've got dill in the garden in your backyard with Monica and the others who tend that garden. You have a virtual garden in your backyard. It's not a real garden, but we can visualize what your garden. I can visualize what your garden looks like. It doesn't correspond to reality, so.
Okay.
That's about it. 1/4 cup of loosely packed flat leaf parsley leaves.
1/4 cup loosely packed flat leaf parsley leaves.
That's right. Yeah, you don't have to chop these up. You just have to put them in there because I'll explain why. Mm-hmm. 2 tablespoonfuls of loosely packed tarragon leaves.
2 big tea loosely packed tarragon leaves.
As you can see, we have lots of spice in here.
Yeah.
1/4 cup of your favorite olive oil, a little more for drizzling.
1/4 cup olive oil.
1/2 red onion finely chopped.
1/2 red onion finely chopped.
And then we're going to use salt and pepper, preferably white pepper because it looks better, but any pepper is fine.
S&P.
Okay, here's how we make it. Really simple. In a blender or a food processor, but a blender works, combine the chopped cucumber, diced avocado with yogurt, lemon juice, shallot, garlic, dill, parsley, tarragon, and 1/4 cup of olive oil and whirl away. That's right. Whirl away and it goes in there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Then season with salt and pepper. Okay, season with salt and pepper.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important. Cover it and put it in the refrigerator overnight.
Why is that important?
It doesn't taste as good. But soups taste better when you leave them overnight anyway. Why does it happen? I don't know. The flavors improve mm-hmm. overnight. I don't actually know the scientific reason of why they get better, mm-hmm. but whenever I make soup, it's much better if I make it a day or two before. This is a good example. It will not taste as good mm-hmm. unless you leave it overnight.
Okay.
Okay, then you take it out, season it again with salt and pepper, taste it,
mm-hmm.
pour the soup into the bowl, garnish with the finely diced cucumber, okay? You're going to put that over the top, and the red onion. You didn't put the red onion in that you've chopped and put over the top. Drizzle it with a little olive oil and serve it.
Yeah, sounds good.
It really, really is good. And now, if you couldn't keep track of all of the all the things we put on there, you're driving in your car, whistling away, thinking about public radio and all the good things that public radio brings into your life, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to our website, that's zorbapastor.org, zorbapastor.org, and find this recipe and under other wonderful recipes. Mm-hmm.
Back to the phones now at 800-462-7413, 1-800-462-7413. And we welcome a listener now, Zorba, in Montreal, Wisconsin. Hi, how can we help?
Well, I'm having an ear issue. Right ear.
Right ear, okay.
Right. There's a touch of tinnitus with it.
Mm-hmm, okay.
But the Meniere's is absolutely miserable.
How long have you had Meniere's disease? That's a disease of the ear, causes deafness and can cause balance problems. How long have you had it?
I'm not honestly sure. Probably close to 10 years.
That's
varying
a long time.
Degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What symptoms do you have? Well, share those with us.
Well, just keeping my balance. Mm-hmm. To get out of bed in the morning, things mm-hmm. will kind of rotate just slightly.
Mm-hmm.
Get out of my recliner, the same thing. It can be bad enough. I had to get rid of both my motorcycles.
Both your how old are you?
Oh, I'm middle-aged, only 77.
Only 77, you had to get rid of your motorcycle. Tom is laughing because he got rid of his motorcycle. How old were you, Tom, when you got rid of your motorcycle?
75.
75, yeah. That's right.
Oh, he was a kid. I do ski, Dr. Z.
You do ski. And
yes.
You ski, where do you ski, in the UP, Upper Peninsula?
Well, we have five ski hills within 15 miles of my home.
Oh, cool.
Both sides of the state line.
Cool.
The best is in the Wisconsin side.
Excellent.
There at Whitecap.
Yeah. Yeah, Whitecap is fun. A little scary. That there's one chairlift at Whitecap that I think about, and my hands just sweat.
Oh, you spent some time up here in Paradise.
Oh,
now.
You bet. I've skied Whitecap, and I've skied the other places. So getting back to the Meniere's disease,
yes.
What do you do about it when you get up? That's a real issue because you don't want to fall. That's the problem.
I am stationary for.
Mm-hmm.
An instant or two.
Okay.
And then I go about my tasks.
Mm-hmm. Good. That's the way to do it. You know, there is no cure for this. That's the big problem. There's no cure.
Oh, let me ask. I had an interview with a surgeon over in Ashland here a couple
mm-hmm.
weeks ago, and I said, do you know anything about treating Meniere's? And I have the note in my hand. He said lipoflavonoids.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know
mm-hmm.
what it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, these are the flavonoids. There's some question whether or not the bioflavonoids and carotenoids will make a difference. And these are actually plentiful in fruits and vegetables that are colorful. So if you eat a diet that's rich in colorful fruits and vegetables, that's probably as good as it gets. But and that's about it. I mean, and so.
I guess this is miserable. I didn't retire for all this nonsense.
No. And balance is really a problem. Now, for some people, I just want to explain something. There's something called benign positional vertigo. It's not the same thing, but we send people to physical therapy to learn something called Epley's maneuver. And Epley's maneuver, when people get dizzy with this, seems to help them with their dizziness. And we'll put a link on our website, zorbapastor.org, for Epley's maneuver. I've never seen any research on what it does for Meniere's disease, but it's possible if you do this twice a day, once in the morning, once in the evening, and it's a way where you sort of put your head over a pillow and you move it from side to side. I can't explain it on the air, but I'll give a link to a YouTube video that really goes, and we'll put that link on our website. That might help you with Meniere's disease. And I would consider doing that once in the morning when you get up, and then either once in the evening when you go to sleep, or once in the middle of the day. And this may help you. It certainly is worth a try, along, as I said, with a more Mediterranean diet that has the flavonoids that surgeon was talking about.
Okay, I'll give that a look, see.
Give it a try. And like you said, the thing about the motorcycles, you know, we laughed and joked about it, but falls are really a main issue. In Dane County, Wisconsin, which is where Madison was, last year roughly there were about 8 murders, gang violence, you know, there were about 8 murders. There were roughly about 18 suicides approximately that we know of. But there were between 35 and 40 people who died from falls. So more people died from falls than murders and suicides combined. And those people, mostly older people, they're usually not younger people. So accidents, as you get older, accidents that when you're younger, when you're a teenager and you're going too fast on those motorcycles are one thing. And when you're older, if you're a codger, and you get on the motorcycle and you're just dizzy and you fall, that's it. But think about that when you go to ladders. Think about your house. Make sure you don't trip on throw rugs, because when you're dizzy, you want to do it. Make sure you have double railings going up and down the stairs. Look about putting a railing in the bathroom, in the toilet when you get up, and when you're standing up in the bathroom, a lot of injuries occur there, because the balance thing you have is never going to go away. The Epley's maneuver may help it, but you got to think about safety.
Okay, that sounds doable somewhat.
It is always doable when it comes to safety. It's not the somewhat, it's the yes, we'll do it. So,
800-462-7413. Zorba, I shocked our listeners who think I'm really, really, really young. I meant to say I gave up my motorcycle when I was 35.
Yeah, right, 35. That's right. That's right. That's right, Tom. When you were 35. Dream on, baby. You're never going to see 35 again, certainly not in this lifetime.
800-462-7413, our number. Before the break, Zorba, you look like you're having a little too much fun today. So let's do the segment where you get yelled at. Here's another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc. Disagreeing with the Doc. Oh, oh, oh.
The following email came to us from an anonymous listener who writes, Dr. Zorba, I enjoy your show. I feel you are usually sympathetic, but...
but...
I was very surprised that you're laughing at the woman claiming her mother-in-law suggests eating beans at every meal. You seem to be focused on the farting.
I was definitely focused on the passing of gas. No doubt about it. What me worry? That's what me would worry about.
As a diabetic, I try to add fiber to my diet.
Yes,
and
sure.
I wish you had promoted eating fiber. If you replace the word beans with fiber, then the mother-in-law would be correct. But you really poo-pooed that woman.
When
potentially
right.
The mother-in-law was mostly correct.
That's exactly right. No, eating beans is wonderful, especially if you have a solitary existence.
So you aren't baking off. You aren't backing off.
I ain't beaning off of my backing off for when you have beans. But I love beans. But I know when I have beans, I may pass a bit of that gas. And you know what? Hey. It shows that I'm a healthy guy, and that's really what counts.
Do you disagree with Zorba? Legume no by posting
gosh.
On our Facebook page or by sending us an email at...
Zorba@WPR.org. Sorry, folks. I know it's public radio, but, you know, Mad Magazine went out. It was one of my favorite things to look at as a kid, and I just have to say, what? Me worry?
Yeah, me too. I have the first few issues of Mad Magazine.
Oh, my God. That is worth thousands of dollars. Thousands. Maybe tens of thousands of dollars.
I got them when my father died. He left them to me in my will.
Mad Magazine. I love it.
More of your calls coming up. Another interesting topic to talk about. All right, here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. The number is 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, Good news for those with a genetic risk for Alzheimer's?
Well, I think it's good news for Alzheimer's. So, first of all, let's talk about Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. Alzheimer's and dementia. Dementia is a broad term. Memory loss, inability to do things and think, executive function, a lot of issues. Half of all dementia is not Alzheimer's. Can't make the diagnosis with actually sticking the needle in your brain and looking at it. So, it kind of fits together in dementia. So, mm-hmm. when we talk about Alzheimer's, we're also really talking about dementia. Two important studies. This first study looked at people who are at a higher risk for Alzheimer's because their parents had Alzheimer's. There was a genetic predisposition. Big study out of the UK. These are people who filled out a 24-hour questionnaire of what they ate, how much they exercised. They did it on a regular basis. And the study was large in the fact that there were literally 200,000 people, 60 years of age and older, who have actually given some blood and genetic material to look at risk factors for Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's and other forms. And what they discovered was that roughly there was those who had a favorable lifestyle over roughly a 10-year period, 1% of them, these are genetic risks, were developing Alzheimer's. Okay, 1%. If they didn't have a favorable lifestyle, it doubled to 2%. This is over a period of time. Mm-hmm. So by not smoking, moderate alcohol, not zero alcohol, moderate alcohol, okay, exercising on a regular basis, fruits and vegetables in a more Mediterranean diet, they cut their risk of Alzheimer's by roughly 50%. Very, very important numbers. Now, let me talk about this other study. The other study came out of Rush University in Chicago. 2,000 people, prospective study. They measure them all the time. When they die, they give their brains to science, and they all have an autopsy in their brain. Okay? So it's a different study altogether, mm-hmm. a very important study. And what they discovered is there are two things. People have a favorable lifestyle. Also do not. They have less dementia, less Alzheimer's disease. But people who engage in good cognitive things, reading, going out with people, talking to people, engaging with people, have less dementia and less Alzheimer's. But that's not the shocking thing about the study. They found that lots of people who didn't show any signs of Alzheimer's but had a healthy diet and engaged in reading and other mental exercise with other people on autopsy, actually had the plaques and tangles of Alzheimer's. Hmm. So in other words, they overcame it by lifestyle and using their brains.
Bad news for me. I don't like talking with people, except on the radio.
So the good news is, if you eat right, if you exercise, moderate alcohol, no smoking, but you engage with other people and you read and use your brain, you reduce your risk from Alzheimer's, and that's important research.
1-800-462-7413 is our number, 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, let's welcome a listener in Brooklyn, New York. Hi.
Hey, how are you guys?
Fine. How can we help?
Well, I have a 13-month-old, and I'd say about when he was about 3 months old, we started to notice some different rashes on his body and a pretty significant difference in his sleep pattern. And so we started to kind of explore what it could be, and long story short, it turned up to be baby eczema. It kind of, just that term kind of seems a little like not that big of a deal, but when it affects a child at his age, it really starts to take hold of the entire body and really becomes a discomfort.
Sure, of course it's a big deal.
24 hours a day, it's just the constant itch. And as a parent, you end up kind of going in circles trying to figure out what it is that is the cause of the issue. Mm-hmm. And so we went through dietary things. Mm-hmm. We kind of did a whole diary of what my wife was eating. Mm-hmm. But really, at the heart of it was really dairy and soy, and there were some nuts that were mixed in there that were really causing the flare-ups. Mm-hmm. So we then went into a whole allergy test scenario to see, what else was in this fleet of dietary things that were causing the eczema to flare up. And sure enough, all of those things that we had kind of pinpointed were triggers for the eczema.
Sure.
And I think the thing that kind of baffled us about the whole thing was her diet through her pregnancy was pretty much impeccable. Fruits and vegetables, we're big on organic diet. No fried foods, no sodas, no nothing. And yet, here we have this condition that we're confused as to where it came from. And to be honest, like, no matter how much research we've done and how much we've gotten different testing done, we still can't figure out what the true triggers are, because it will pop up here and there. The only thing that's been a positive at this point is that over time, his body seems to have gotten
better,
I guess.
That's right. That's exactly what it is. So, first of all, we don't know what causes it. I mean, but let me start at the very beginning. There's randomness in the universe. Heisenberg uncertainty principle showed there was randomness in terms of knowing where an electron was and where it's going. And there's randomness in the human genome. And so we like to know cause and effect. So, for instance, if there's something we did that actually caused it, and then was that the effect that actually occurred? And a lot of times there is no cause and effect. It's randomness. And other times there really is a cause and effect. And in terms of eczema, if there's a family history, that's what happens genetically. But it also happens in a lot of families where there isn't a family history. So the good news is that over time, for most kids, it tends to get better. And for many of them, it tends to disappear. And as adults, they might have patches of eczema here and there, which they often get under control. Some have eczema problems throughout their life, but most do not, actually. As their skin toughens up, whatever that means, I mean, there are different changes as they get older because baby skin is so gentle, your child most likely will continue to get better. And looking at the triggers of his eczema, very, very important, because you may find that there are some triggers, things that he eats, you know, in the way that you treat him, that actually make it worse, and then removing those triggers. But also realizing it's going to occur, not occur with randomness. So what do you do when he has it? How are you treating him?
Well, I think the biggest thing for us has been the different lotions. I mean, we've shied away from steroids really, really bad.
Get a bad flare, use a steroid, get it under control. But what you want is lotions that actually do it that do not have medications in them. You're exactly right. Right.
Absolutely. And there's been one product that's really been, we've obviously met other parents who have had a similar issue, and it's funny, they all kind of say this particular product is the one to use. Trial and error, I think it's just the one that works for you, but continual application of that seems to really, really help. But diet is a really big one too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. and you look at the triggers, then you realize there's randomness. But the other thing I think you said at the very beginning, what we talked about, is really important. It doesn't sound like a big thing, but actually it is a big thing for that child, and it's a big thing for the parents, because eczema doesn't feel good, and, you know, a 15-month or an 18-month-old can't say, hey, this doesn't feel good, I want this over here, because their ability to communicate, because they don't use the same words we do, is not there. But what they're doing is telling you when they're unhappy that, hey, I need some help over here. And that becomes a very big issue from a behavioral point of view. And so using love and kindness and treating this appropriately, which you're obviously doing, is a very important thing. And then knowing that the chances are really, really likely that over time this is going to disappear either partially or completely.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think there's anything worse than seeing your son at his introduction to the world and seeing the look on his face when he doesn't know why there's this rash that's irritating him all over his body. I mean, because there are points where, you know, I think when we first introduced solid foods to him, that was the peak of it, because it was all this new stuff coming into his body.
Right.
And the reaction was just outward.
Right. That's exactly it. And the reaction to that. But you're doing a good job. And using non-medicated lotions, way to go. Only using the steroids and the other medications that are also used for eczema that are non-steroids, very important. Use them minimally. Go back to the lotions whenever you can. So,
Absolutely.
So,
all right, guys. Thanks so much. All right.
1-800-462-7413. Okay, Zorba, now hold on for a second. Let me pull out my slick new smartphone and check the Zorba Pastorini Health Facebook page. Time again to fire up the segment we call Facebook Feedback.
Facebook feedback.
I can't seem to find that slick.
I know. You've been looking in your pocket for years, you know?
Anyway.
You know, your smartphone is a push button instead of a rotary.
Lucky for me that our producer, Carl, has typed this out for
me. That's right. That's right. No. He used a word processor. He actually didn't use a typewriter.
Marilyn in Milwaukee, Wisconsin writes, Dr. Zorba, get with the times. On a recent show, you told a caller that a veggie burger is not going to taste like meat. Well, you are wrong. Try a Beyond Burger, and you will be singing a different tune.
Okay.
I've been a vegan for over 30 years and never thought I'd see the day when a veggie burger actually tasted like meat. Please try a Beyond Burger. You will love it and not be able to tell the difference between it and meat.
Now, I have a question for you. I mean, let's look at what you just read in there. This person has been a vegan for more than 30 years.
Yeah.
Okay. They've now tasted a burger that tastes them like a hamburger. They have not tasted a hamburger in 30 years.
She doesn't remember the taste from 30
years. She does not remember the taste of a hamburger. And so to her, it tastes just like a hamburger. To me, it probably tastes like cardboard. That's supposed to taste like a hamburger. Sorry.
That's pretty good.
His horn.
Have a beef with something Zorba said about veggie burgers. Don't have a cow. Just post on our Facebook page. Or you can always send us an email.
Zorba at WPR.org. And I'm really sorry. I really didn't mean to offend the vegans out there. But the burger manufacturers, they're kind of another thing.
Let's take another call. A listener with us in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hi. I am a self-proclaimed popcornaholic.
Oh.
And I love popcorn. I could eat it every night. But I've been recently reading and some stuff about microwave popcorn, you know, not being so good, although it is a little bit tastier to me than the regular popcorn that you put on the pan and blah, blah, blah. And I wondered what you thought about it. What do you think of microwave popcorn?
Well, it kind of depends on what's in the label. So you want to read the label. First of all, if you take regular popcorn, obviously you get the corn, you know, the oil that you put in, and you put it in the pan and you pop it. So you know exactly what you're getting. So microwave popcorn, you've got to look at it and see what's in the label. Does it have 5 ingredients or 4 ingredients or 25 ingredients? If you look at a Twinkie, Twinkies typically have 42 ingredients. And I always hold up the Twinkie as something we don't want to have. You know, the Twinkie that I bought probably 20 years ago, if I kept it in a plastic package, probably tastes exactly the same as it does today because it has all the other stuff in it that keeps it from spoiling. If you're looking at microwave popcorn, what you want to look and see what's in the label. It often has coconut oil and has a few other things, but you're looking for something with minimal stuff. Now, as for popcorn being a treat, it's so much better than chips, so much better than Cheetos. I was looking at Cheetos the other day because I was getting a sub at Subway. I love subs, and I periodically look at Cheetos, and I periodically actually have a Cheeto, but I was looking at it, and the Cheetos were almost as many calories as the sub. I looked at it and I said, this is all oil, and it's oil calories, and I didn't get it because I thought to myself, this is really dumb and stupid. I don't want to eat that stupid, dumb junk stuff. You want to look at popcorn, and you want to buy a popcorn, microwave popcorn, that has a few ingredients in it. I don't think there's anything wrong with microwave popcorn. I think some microwave popcorn is just filled with junk, and others are not. Now, have you ever read the label on the microwave popcorn?
Probably not.
Neither have I. because I don't eat it. I just know it probably has multiple ingredients. But go to the store. It's on the package because it's ought to be on the package. And pick one that has the fewest ingredients. And popcorn is really a great snack. Do you have a weight problem at all?
A little bit.
Popcorn is usually, especially if you make it yourself, obviously, is a wonderful dish that actually is a low calorie dish compared to the other salty snacks that we eat. So
the difference between the popcorn that you pop it's tougher, you know, and the microwave popcorn is a little bit
crispier. Oh, it's tougher. See, I'm not a popcornaholic. My wife is a popcornaholic. If we make popcorn, she doesn't eat the microwave. So it has a difference in the texture.
It's a little different texture.
That's interesting. I wonder if you do popcorn that you pop, I wonder if you shoved it in the microwave for another minute or 30 seconds, I wonder if the texture would change. I wonder if it's the microwave energy that's going into the popcorn that changes it.
I would think that that's probably
maybe. I don't know.
Statement.
You may want to experiment. But getting back to the issue at hand, enjoy it with fewest ingredients.
Thank you. That's what exactly I'll do. Thank you very much.
Thanks for
your call. We appreciate the call.
I wonder if everyone in Jacksonville loves popcorn. I wonder if that's like the popcorn capital of America.
Huh? I kind of doubt it. Before we head out, Zorba, let's crack open the Zorba Pastor in Your Health inbox and share a few listener emails. On a recent show, we asked our listeners to share what they thought were some of the benefits of getting old. And here's a sampling of what listeners said.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you for being so civil about aging. I think that's really important.
Okay. First, Denise in Kentucky said, a good thing about getting old is you didn't die young.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Very insightful. Very insightful.
Next, Nelda submitted the following list of advantages of getting older. It's better than the alternative.
That's right. Groucho Marx.
If you were a teacher, you get hugs from former students.
That's true.
People give you their seats.
That's true.
And you are forgiven for forgetting names, I hope. And finally, Chuck in Middleton, Wisconsin wrote, older people are not faced with the pressure to succeed because they have either met their life's goals or are closer to having done so than most younger people.
Yes.
Or they've given up and moved on. This reduces stress and allows extra time to do more enjoyable things, like listening to Zorba Pastor.
Oh, I love it. Woo!
And Tom Clark, he says, Wisconsin Public Radio.
There we go. I love it. That's right. I listen to you all the time on Wisconsin Public Radio.
You don't have any choice. And I don't either.
No, I don't. That's right.
Would you like to contribute to the show? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org. Maybe we should make it Tom@WPR.org.
We'll be looking at each other again in a week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.